Live from Chicago, it's Chris Roebling sitting in tonight for Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Welcome, everybody, back to the program. Tonight, our commentary from an all-star panel. John McCarron, Chicago Tribune columnist, adjunct professor at DePaul University, longtime friend of the program, as is Bob Kramer, partner at Democracy Partners and Democratic political strategist. Robert Dole joins us tonight, former United States representative from the 10th District, the great 10th District of the state of Illinois. Welcome one, welcome all. In the second hour, we'll also be saying hello to Michael Barone, the noted political analyst. Big weekend for our federal government. The national political story is the shutdown, the debt limit ceiling vote. And as we went on the air tonight, there didn't seem to be any one solution in hand, either on the Republican side in the House or the Democratic side in the Senate or down on Pennsylvania Avenue at the White House. So I'm going to ask you each very briefly to give us an overview of what you think is going to happen next. How will Congress and the president get from where they are? And we'll start with you, Bob Kramer.
Well, their way to solve this problem is simply to have a vote, an up or down vote in both houses of Congress, where there is a majority of votes to have a clean, what they call a clean CR, that is a clean continuing resolution to reopen the government, and a debt ceiling increase that would allow us to pay our bills. There's a majority that exists in both houses to do that, and basically a small faction of one party, of one branch of government, is holding America hostage to try and extort from the rest of us something they can't pass through the normal democratic process.
Former Congressman Bob Dole, you were a Republican member of Congress for 2 years. Do you agree with Bob Kramer or not, and why not?
Well, I think the solution, I think the American public right now is extraordinarily frustrated. I think they think Washington's not working, and that's both sides of the aisle. And frankly, just it's not going to have a solution by just pointing the finger. So I do think that there will be a solution. I think there will have a solution before the 17th when it's time, go time with regard to the debt limit. And I do think that there's going to be pressure put on by the American public, by the markets, to really force people to sit down and come to the table and raise the debt limit. And there's been an impasse not wanting to do that and, frankly, even talking on the other side of the aisle. So I think it's going to be time for adults to get together and pass something that at least moves in a short term to allow some negotiations on some of the deficit reduction that needs to happen.
John McCarron of the Chicago Tribune, is it time for a short extension of the debt limit ceiling so that all of these other issues can be addressed in regular order?
Well, I think it is. And I think that's an item that the president really can't give in on, because I think he can point correctly and say this is a form of extortion, that that it's like economic violence, or, you know, stop us or we'll trash the economy. I'm just hoping that somewhere on the Hill staff is meeting and deciding to do that short-term extension of the ceiling, and then maybe we can start doing some horse trading that might even involve the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act.
So Bob Kramer, what debt limit extension period are you looking at? What would you look at if you were down there with a vote? Would you look at sort of this, we're going to get past Thanksgiving, maybe between Thanksgiving and Christmas idea, or Susan Collins, a Republican member of the U.S. Senate from Maine, said maybe we should go 6 months to about March or so. Where do you come out on that?
I mean, the debt limit needs to be extended for a year or more, if you ask me. I mean, the idea that you would say, well, gee, we're not going to pay our bills and we'll potentially sink the American and world economy, and that's our threat, that we just can't tolerate that in America. Now, with respect to the continuing resolution, I think there's talk about doing something short term so that there can be negotiations over the budget. Remember, the Republicans in the House refused to negotiate with the Senate over the budget. 18 times there were attempts made, and they wouldn't do that. I mean, I think it's reasonable to say let's extend the continuing resolution for 6 weeks or something, and then allow a serious discussion of the budget to take place. You'll notice that Obamacare, which was the reason why this alleged shutdown happened, is no longer part of the serious discussion because, of course, Obamacare is moving right along. And
or maybe not moving right along, maybe moving along with bumps and
with
glitches.
With bumps and glitches. I mean, but you know, there's been a massive number of people who are interested in joining these exchanges.
They've been able to join?
Well, in some places they have. I mean, there's no doubt that the websites, you know, had a lot of problems. The national one in New York, you know, there have been, I think, 40,000 people enrolled as of 2-3 days ago. In California, it's about 46,000 enrolled. You know, we've seen hundreds of thousands of people who have gone to these websites to check out their prices. What's going to happen here is going to be the same thing that happened in Connecticut. I mean, pardon me, in Massachusetts when it got put in place by Romney. It took a while to get worked up, but people joined A and B. Now they love it.
Okay, Bob Dold, I say to all three of you, I want to spend most of the time tonight talking about the future, and not asking our busy radio listening audience or XM POTUS. I'm sorry, XM Sirius XM POTUS channel listening audience to kind of get up to speed with parliamentary procedure in the House and legislating on appropriation, a lot of inside terminology, because it's hard for people to learn that stuff. Sure. I worked there and it was hard for me to learn it. So I don't ask anybody to learn it while they're driving a car with kids screaming in the backseat. But Bob Dold, Bob Cramer just characterized things like the Senate Republicans not negotiating with the Senate Democrats on the Senate budget resolution.
Which the House Republicans not negotiating with the Senate that passed the budget. They wouldn't negotiate with the Senate.
All right. Let's go through some of Cramer's. What's your view?
My view is let's first congratulate the Senate for putting a budget together. It's been, 3 years, which is against the law, by the way. They have to, by law, mandatory, come up with a budget. The fact that they decided to wake up and finally put a budget together, we do need to give credit where credit is due. Thank them for coming to at least have a discussion about what needs to happen. I believe that we do need to go and get people in the room and work out a budget negotiation so that the American people have a budget with their government. That's what small businesses have budgets. People that are struggling to make ends meet, they have a budget. They should expect that the federal government do the same. And as we look at this debt negotiation thing, this idea of just extending the debt limit, you know, listen, at some point in time, we have to say, why are we here? Just a few short years ago, current President of the United States said it's a failure of leadership, and he would not agree to vote to extend the debt limit. That was when it was $8.3 trillion. It is over double that today.
And who was it who said that?
That was President Barack Obama as the United States Senator in 2006. And I don't begrudge him for saying it. All I'm saying is we have to do something to try to make sure that we're not talking down the road at $25 trillion and we're doing the same thing. So how do we make sure that we're not going to continue to add more dollars in? We need to make sure that we as a nation solve those problems together.
That's former Congressman Bob Dold. We're going to hear from John McCarron, Chicago Tribune columnist, in reaction to what former Congressman Dold just said right after the upcoming break. My name's Chris Roebling. I'm in for Bruce Dumont. And we're not just doing the program here in the studio. We want to hear from you. The number's 800-723-8289. 800-723-8289. We want to hear from you right after these few words. It is an exquisitely beautiful Sunday in October across most of America, and that means it's a great time to nestle with your radio and listen to Beyond the Beltway. My name's Chris Roebling. I'm sitting in for my friend Bruce Dumont, who's taking a deserved night off. He'll be back shortly. Our number is 800-723-8289. The program is not entirely here in the studio. We want to hear from you. We even take emails at btb@museum.tv. All-star panel tonight, John McCarron, Bob Cramer, Bob Dold. John McCarron, you made the point during the break that a lot of this ground has been plowed over the last 2 or 3 weeks. This whole shutdown actually was in a run-up to the 1st of October. And so we're talking now about well over, say, 14 days. Where do the parties And where do the participants go from here?
Yeah, you're right. Our talking points lists are starting to grow whiskers here. We've been using them for 3 weeks, and everybody's familiar with them by now. I'd say I want to say two things. One is I think we need to talk about the remap process, about gerrymandering.
Okay.
We need to talk, and I'd be interested to hear what Bob, don't we gerrymandered in Illinois? The Democrats drew the map.
That's right.
And probably we'd be talking to
Bob's bandages just when they came off last week or what, 2 days ago? I don't
right.
know.
It's, right.
You're
I
looking
mean,
great, man.
In the age of computers,
that's
you,
right.
you can
– right.
you can. I'm sorry. Do you want to talk about something else?
Yeah, I'm saying yeah.
Yeah. In the age of computers, you can gerrymander to the point where what's going on? And they in Texas and North Carolina, they did it even better for the Republican side. So we have all these districts.
And how does that vector into what's happening now?
Well, because we have people with safe districts that don't need to negotiate, who, in fact, if they negotiate, would be in trouble with their base back in the district that votes in the primary. That's problem number one. So maybe we need to start thinking about nonpartisan remap.
Nonpartisan remap. We're going to write that down. I'm right below unicorns who give popcorn
no,
on Michigan Avenue.
Actually,
nonpartisan remap.
There are states.
Bob Kramer is laughing right now.
All for doing it if we do it in every state in America.
Okay.
Sure. At the same
all
time.
All right.
No,
all right. The Goodness and Niceness Commission.
I mentioned I had a second thing.
Go ahead.
And the other thing is we got to do something about what I call angertainment. Media.
Oh, excellent
word. Entertainment. I mean, and here we are on talk radio tonight, so I
but
know,
none of us is angry.
We're not angry, no, but we haven't taken calls yet.
No, so, we haven't paid for parking either.
Uh-oh, that's a threat. So, yeah, I think the whole level of discourse with the internet now, and everybody's a publisher. You just, you know, you get out there and you blog away. We no longer have a priesthood, if you will, of expert people who went to J school and et cetera, et cetera.
But John,
the quality of discourse, the quality of information that we're armed with, I think, has really fallen off. And you have these kind of demagogues, you know, who are building audiences, basically trying to channel the anger of the American people over the fact that they haven't had a raise in 30 years.
All right. Let us turn. I want to turn directly to Bob. Tell us, what about reapportionment?
Look, the redistricting reform that John talks about, I think, is absolutely one of the big reasons we've got the system that we have today. The reason why things are so polarized today, I would point to, as the professor pointed, as redistricting reform. So what we've got, I think the vast majority of the American public, I think, lives between the 30-yard lines. And yet we focus most of our attention on the extremes. And it's because when the Republicans are in charge in states like Texas or North Carolina or others, they want to create those lock Republican districts. When the Democrats are in charge of a state, they want to create the lock Democratic districts. And consequently, what we find is people are not looking at trying to do what's best for the people. They're trying to say, how do I deal with my base? And therefore it – consequently, the people that end up losing out on this thing is the American public. And as we continue to move down this path more and more, out of the 435 races for the United States Congress in 2014, my guess is there'll probably be about 40 to 45 competitive House races.
So you're talking 10%?
10%.
10% of the U.S. House is represented by races that are competitive.
I think that's going to be accurate this next go around.
Bob Kramer. All right, you have been around a lot of campaigns for many, many years. And how do you think that McCarran's theory here tonight about reapportionment, is that a fundamental element of what we are confronting both with the Obamacare and the debt limit?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that's true. I mean, there's been a movement in Illinois, for instance, to try and change that. The problem is if you change it in Illinois, then it puts Republicans at a more advantageous position. You have to do it every place in a country if you're going to change the system.
So you want to federalize?
Well, I'm just saying, as a practical matter,
There
has to be, you know, you can't just change in one state without making a nationwide change. Otherwise, you skew this in a direction. And the Republicans clearly did a great job redistricting last time. That's the reason we won. The Democrats won 2 million votes more for the House, but they still control the House. Now, on the polarization question, though,
yes,
there was a political scientist a couple of years ago did a study of polarization in the United States and found that there was one principal variable, and that was economic polarization. That is, the extent to which there was increased inequality of income distribution in the United States led to more polarization in its politics. And that's the real question.
All right. Let's hear from some of the folks who are listening at home. Joe in Northwest Arkansas, listening to us on the beloved KURM. Great to hear from you, Joe. Your bottom line point for the panel, please.
Well, I think we vote on these people and send them up there to do a job, and then they refuse to negotiate. They're not doing what they were sent up there to do.
Thank you very much, Joe. Bob, when people get to Washington, do they forget the folks who sent them there?
No, I don't think they forget. I would agree.
Joe's not the only one who feels this way.
Joe's not the only one who feels like this. I feel like this. I mean, look, these folks up in Washington, D.C. are not sitting around the table. They're not taking the courageous stance to solve the big problems and get people back to work. There's no question about that. But if you look to the point that John was making earlier on these redistricting things, you get these locked districts, and they're going in there. They were elected to do certain things, and they are I would argue, in some of these districts doing, in terms of holding people's feet to the fire, doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Carol is listening to us.
Yeah, as much as that may be painful for us to think about.
Yeah, well, and we want to talk more about the actual – what a compromise actually looks like. But let's first talk to Carol in Patterson, California. Good evening, Carol. Thanks for listening to the program. Your bottom line point for the panel.
Bottom line point is I think we have been invaded. In California, it's very difficult to get a job if you're a citizen here. The Mexicans come in, they get a job before they even get here. The price of everything is sky high. Gasoline is almost $5 a gallon out here. The food is going up every day. We're struggling to make it. We can't get a job if you're a citizen and you don't speak Spanish.
Let me ask you, do you feel like Washington is confronting the issues that you confront when you conduct your daily affairs?
I think Washington has sold us out.
To whom or for what?
Maybe to the Chinese for kickbacks. I don't know what they're doing. They're sure not doing our work.
All right. Thank you very much for Carol in Patterson, California. Bob Kramer, is the Obama administration afraid to talk about Obamacare because it remains by, I think, basically all surveys as a whole, not individually, but as a whole, it doesn't generate a majority of support. And this is 2.5 years after it was enacted.
You know, on the Obamacare front, I think that one of the reasons why Ted Cruz and that whole crew were so nuts about trying to do something about ending Obamacare now is because they know once it's in effect, it will become very popular. Just as it did in Massachusetts, just as Medicare did, you know, that's what's going to happen. And then it will not be assailable politically. And that's what's going to happen here. Now, let me just, by the way, reflect on that last comment.
Carol's saying that Washington has sold us out. It's not dealing with her issues.
A lot of people feel that, oh, my God, you know, I haven't had a raise in 30 years. And that's because it's true. Most people haven't had a raise in 30 years, even though, you know, we hear from the Republicans all the time that, we're in a time of scarcity. We're not. We're at a time where there's more money per capita in this economy, more income, more wealth than at any time in American history.
But Bob,
the reason is because all of that went to the top 2%, in many respects, the top 0.5% of the population. That's the fundamental issue facing the country. That's what we got to deal with.
All right. Let's talk more about that after we hear from Suzanne in Austin, Texas, listening on KLBJ. Welcome, Suzanne. What is your bottom line point? Suzanne is right there. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Gentleman on your program just brought up the balanced budget. I'm wondering when the last time Congress set about to balance the budget. And why it has, I never hear it being discussed, and except for maybe a few Republicans, and I'm wondering why it seems to be a kind of a taboo subject with Democrats. And I'm an independent, by the way.
All right, Suzanne, thank you very much. John McCarron, your reply to Suzanne. Why don't people care about the balanced budget?
Maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems to me we just about balanced the budget last year. I mean, I'm not talking about the national debt here going forward, but in terms of income versus outflow, we're getting awfully close.
If the deficit for last year was $700 million.
Depends.
Billion.
Billion dollars, sorry. Billion.
Well, it depends how you count it and whether you bring in these ancillary agencies, FHA, et cetera, et
Well,
cetera.
I mean, but we have $17 trillion of debt. And when President Obama started, that was, I think, around 12.
Well, look, let's be clear, though. He started in the midst of a great recession.
What's happened is the deficit of the United States. Go back to the beginning
the deficit has dropped.
George Bush.
Yeah.
I mean, our deficits are adding up to massive debt.
The last time we had a balanced budget was under Bill Clinton.
Right.
And
with Newt Gingrich,
and
who was in
the fact of the matter is, and the fact of the matter is, that was because we increased taxes on the rich, A. And today, we have a reduction in the debt that is higher than at any time since World War II.
That's Bob Cramer. He joins John McCarron, Bob Dold. I'm Chris Roebling in for Bruce Dumont. See you after these words. Sunday evening means Beyond the Beltway. Normally it means Bruce Dumont, but Bruce Dumont is taking the evening off. My name is Chris Roebling sitting in along with John McCarron, Bob Cramer, Bob Dold. And in the second hour, we're going to hear from esteemed national political analyst Michael Barone, both about his new book and to weigh in on the issues of this weekend. Let's look forward. Let's look forward here. Let's talk about if you guys, if it was up to the three of you to resolve this, and you understood that, you know, you get into this, even if the Republicans don't like the Democrats don't like the Republicans, you realize that in politics, you've got to give people a face-saving way out, okay? So they may have gotten in here for the wrong reasons, Democrat, Republican, whatever. Things didn't happen the way they should have, whatever. Let's put all of that in the rearview mirror and just talk about, you know, what's going on inside the windshield coming at us. What do we do? Let's get more specific. How do the Democrats and the Republicans start to trade horses to get out of this stuck position? Now, I think at the beginning of the program, you were all in favor of an extension of the debt limit ceiling so that that's not hanging around in the background. What do we do about Obamacare? What changes should be made in Obamacare? What would the administration accept? What do the Republicans have to go away and not look like this was a total disaster for them?
Well, as we look at the Affordable Care Act, I think that the Democrats, the president, have made it pretty clear that that's like a lightning rod at this point in time. If the Republicans are going to put the Affordable Care Act as trying to either delay it for a year, that's going to be a non-starter. And really, I think that what we ought to be focusing on is how do we talk about some long-term deficit reduction? How do we deal with some of the entitlement crisis? That's not going to happen in a short-term deal either. So things like the RAINS Act, which I think is something, frankly, that I think makes a lot of sense. And what that is for the people that are listening is any regulation coming out of the executive branch that's going to cost the American public over $100 million has to be voted on up or down by the United States Congress. Something that, again, that's been stalled at Harry Reid's doorstep. So those are the types of things that I think if we can try to move something forward would be able to, I think, hopefully.
Why are you, Bob Dold, former United States Congressman, Republican, why are you not saying that the individual mandate should be put off for a year?
Well, I understand. Listen, I have not been a proponent. I think there are some aspects of the Affordable Care Act that many of the Americans like. I think there's some very problematic aspects of it. And certainly the argument that's being put in place right now as to why delay it. The administration has chosen to delay big businesses a year. What they're saying is the exchanges are open. So if you want to go into the exchanges, go ahead. Get into the exchanges if you can get in. The Affordable Care Act is up and operational. But don't tax and penalize those that choose not to for up to 1 year, the individuals.
Right.
And that's the argument of fairness that many are arguing. It doesn't seem like that's is moving at all with the other side right now. The Democrats don't want to hear anything about it. If it's anything with regard to the Affordable Care Act, that's like kryptonite. They don't want to touch it.
All right. Bob Cramer, is it kryptonite? You not want to touch it?
Well, I mean, you're not going to delay the mandate because if you do that, it will make it likely that large numbers of young, healthy people don't join the exchanges, and as a consequence, is a recipe to make them fail. And that, of course, is the idea.
So then what is the justification to give big business a break but not to give individuals a break?
Well, I'm not particularly a fan of giving them a year to require that they provide coverage for people who are over 30 employees. But let me be clear. The projection is that there's a tiny percentage of employees will be affected by that decision. Hardly anybody. And it won't affect the fundamental architecture of the law. I mean, the fundamental notion here is that if everybody buys insurance, then we can afford to assure that nobody who has pre-existing conditions is denied insurance. And if you talk to the people who are interviewing these folks on the phones, they say, these people are calling and saying, I've never had the opportunity to buy insurance because I had a pre-existing condition. I've saved thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real face of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, another face of the Affordable Care Act was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune today that said there is sticker shock abroad in the land when people find out either the payments or the deductibles. But you wanted a quick point, Bob, before we go to John McCarron?
I was going to just bring up that very point from the Chicago Tribune today. The sticker shock is going to be incredible.
The deductibles for the bronze, silver and gold plans are sometimes higher than what people anticipate. John McCarron, what might be given to the Democrats so that they've got something to come out of this, and what might be given to the Republicans so they've got something to come out of this?
I think you've asked the key question. They both need to be given some kind of fig leaf to save face. For the president, I think he needs that debt ceiling and an extension of at least 6 months to say this isn't something you threaten you use as a tool on the Hill to threaten the opposition. It's off limits. And for the Republicans, the thing that, frankly, I have appeals to me is this exclusion from Obamacare enjoyed by Congress and its staff. I mean that's a great talking point for the Republicans, and it would seem to me it wouldn't hurt the program one iota if that were somehow done away with.
It's all true. Of course, it's ridiculous, because what's really happening here is right now, employees of Congress, and we're talking about the $30,000 a year employee that Bob used to have in his office. And I used to be.
Hey, wait a minute. Right. When I started in Congress, exactly. $14,000 a year. Okay.
They get employer-provided health care, like most employees in the United States.
Right.
And there's an employer subsidy. What they're talking about is eliminating that employer subsidy. Everybody was required to take the same insurance policies that were on the exchanges to demonstrate, I think, to the American people that they're good policies. And that's a fine thing, the way we have it now. But, of course, they should have subsidies, just like most employees do. That's ridiculous, and it's a pandering demagogic proposal.
You're saying that McCarron is a panderer and a demagogue.
Well, I didn't say he is, but the people who are proposing it are.
Well, all right. I wonder myself where this thing is going to go. I mean, I'm beginning to wonder if there is – well, hold on a second. Just cool your jets for one half a second
here. Okay.
I am concerned with what I hear. I don't hear a lot today about we've got two or three areas where we can agree. I don't hear that today. What I hear today is there was a little – that the president, who had said, I'm not going to talk to anybody, I'm not going to negotiate with anybody, kind of fell off of that, started talking to people, didn't like what he heard from the House, then turned to the Senate and is trying to get something going with the Senate. But meanwhile, I don't think there's any uptake for that in the United States House of Representatives, John. I mean, are you hearing this thing building towards a conclusion?
Not in the media, no. But as I said earlier in the show, I would hope that there is a boiler room somewhere where chiefs of staff, where, you know, policy directors for their respective principals are actually talking like we're talking right now.
A tiny faction of the Republican Party in Congress is holding America hostage.
The fact is that you've got a majority in the House that has been supporting Speaker Boehner.
A majority of Congress right now have gone on record saying they'd support a clean CR, that is to say, opening the government with no conditions, right now, if a vote were allowed by the Speaker, and he's not allowing it because he's held hostage by this Tea Party crew.
Robert Dold, you served with John Boehner. Did he look like a hostage? Was Stockholm Syndrome visible? Was he lashed together with a cage or something?
No, I don't believe that he is being held hostage. I think that there is a vocal group, and frankly, there's vocal groups on the extremes on both sides of the aisle. And so, you know, for Bob to say it's just the Republicans, I think that's inaccurate. But I do think that there are those that are looking at trying to say, wait a second, we're at $17 trillion in debt. We have to do something. And I think that the speaker wants to get a deal done. I think the speaker wants to open up the government. Certainly, I would be a proponent to say we've got to open up the government. We've got to get people back to work. And we've got to come up with solutions that solve the big problems for the American public.
Democrats agreed to the Republican number for a short-term extension of the budget, I mean, a short-term continuing resolution. That was – Democrats agreed to the Republican number. And then they said, nope, that's not good enough. We want to end Obamacare. And then it was something else. And then it was contraceptives for women. And then it was a whole laundry list of fringe right-wing demands made by this small group.
That's why the government is shut down today. I think the government is shut down today, and you got to hear me out on this, because the government is shut down physically. It is shut down because once the House passed a non-identical resolution, there was supposed to be a conference committee, okay, to get to a final identical measure, and Harry Reid said, I am not going. We are not going. We will not have a negotiation. We will not have a conference committee. Now, I'm going to ask you if you've got it in you to admit that that's the proximate cause.
Now, the proximate cause is that the Democratic leadership and the president were unwilling to have the American people held hostage by this small group. Wait a second, Chris. Because if we accede to those hostage-taking demands now, there will be no end. They'll be back and back and back. Let me ask you this. Bob Dole, would you have voted for the resolution to the continuing resolution that delayed Obamacare?
Would I have voted to delay the individual mandate?
Would you have voted with the majority in the House to have delayed Obamacare?
There were seven.
There was one that was the critical vote.
But the House Republicans themselves dispensed with that, and they moved from
on that key vote, even a lot of the guys who say they now would vote for a clean continuing resolution voted for it. Why
are you putting forward hypotheticals? I mean, that is
because Bob's running for Congress again.
All right, okay, Bob.
Look, I believe that we've got to get the government open. I think that it has to happen fairly quickly here, and no more dilly-dallying around. But we do have to sit down and talk about long-term deficit
reduction. Would you have voted for it or not?
I would have voted to keep the government open.
You would have voted against the leaders.
Well,
I have in the past voted against leadership, but I would make sure that we would be working for the people.
Guys, I got to go. We're up against a break, but it's fun to listen to you two, and that's why it's fun to listen to Beyond the Beltway. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes taking your calls right here on Beyond the Beltway. Stay with us. Chris Roebling joining you this evening on Beyond the Beltway. Bruce Dumont, a deserved evening off, joining me in the studio and you over the airwaves. John McCarron, Chicago Tribune columnist and adjunct professor at DePaul University. Bob Kramer, a partner at Democracy Partners and author of the longtime bestseller, Listen to Your Mother, Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win. And Bob Dold is here, former United States Congressman from the state of Illinois, Republican Congressman from the 10th District. 648. Let's go to Dave in Wilmington, Illinois, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Dave, your bottom line point, please.
I'm listening to these talks that you guys are having. I'm thinking, what a joke. Funding birth control? Where's individual responsibility? And as far as Carol goes, we got politicians, including McCain, who are selling the American people out to get a pool of ignorant, hands-out voters that they're going to be dependent on government, and they're going to vote for whoever wants anything that's going to be given to them. They're going to say, oh, yeah, I want this guy. My opinion is if anyone in government wants to be responsible before allow any increase in the debt limit, a negotiated balanced budget or a budget not higher than the previous year should be the goal and should be obtained.
Dave, thanks very much for that. Be sure to listen in the second hour because we're going to be talking about immigration a little bit with Michael Barone, his new book, Shaping America, How Surges of Immigration Transformed America and Its Politics. Don is also listening on WLS, and he's been holding very patiently. Thank you, Don, for your patience. Your bottom line point, please.
Well, I keep hearing the talk of factions and jihadists and all these comments that are being made in regard to the Republicans. And I just want everybody to remember that there are voters behind pushing these elected officials to try and formulate these changes. That's really my comment, and I just
think
it's very upsetting.
I'll put that to Bob Cramer. Well, Don's talking about the voters behind.
Right.
When Harry Reid said, even though the House passed a different version of the appropriations bill, I will not go to a conference. Was he not negating the voters that Don just referred to? Isn't he negating? Since there are people who actually elected these Tea Party, you might not like the Tea Party people. That's okay.
Sure.
You don't have to like them. But somebody elected them, and shouldn't those individuals, American voters, be heard?
In a democracy, majority rules. There's a majority of the House and Senate will ready and willing at this moment to open the government and to raise the debt limit so we can pay our bills.
Except we litigated this issue
in the Obamacare issue in the last election. Democrats won the election. One more votes in for the House.
Did the Democrats give up on saying "Don't ask, don't tell" when they would lose and lose and lose? Didn't they come back?
We did not hold America's economy hostage in order to get it, did we?
If there is a default, yeah.
If there is a default,
okay. So you're back to debt limit.
Well,
now.
It's all been conflated here by the Republicans, and as a consequence, let me just say the number of Republican people supporting that position have just plummeted. The general approval rate of Republicans is at its all time low since the history of polling today.
Bob Dold, how is President Obama's approval rating doing?
I don't think the president's approval rating is all that high right now. I certainly don't think the Democrats' approval rating is going through the roof either. I think Washington approval ratings are absolutely down in the dumps because the American public are looking at it saying, what in the world are these guys doing? And so, again, there's a lot of finger pointing going on, and I know that's Bob's business in the political consulting world is to point the finger and say it's the other guy's fault. But, you know, I'm of the belief that, look, we've got to talk about how do we solve these big problems that are in front of us. Dick Durbin today on national television said, look, Medicare is going bankrupt in 10 years. We've got to do something about it. So at least it's a recognition.
But then my question for you is, maybe Bob has a point here, not that he's trying to help Republicans, but did Republicans go down the wrong path by allowing a conflation of Obamacare with the debt limit?
I think that they're hearing from their constituents. There's a tremendous amount of concern. They're looking at a high unemployment rate. They're talking to employers. The employers are saying, I don't know what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act. I'm certainly not hiring new people right now. They're holding back. This is all part of the problem.
Yeah.
And so I assume as this rolls out, there will obviously be more information, but we're going to see, I think, rates that are going to continue to rise. I think the fact that it's all tied together is all timing.
John McCarron, which is more significant to the health of the United States, the budget issue or problems with Obamacare?
The budget issue. I mean,
do you think the Republicans did not choose the right battle for this autumn?
No, they didn't, because I mean, they should have read the results from the last presidential election. That was issue number one. They lost. Turn the page. Move on to the real problems here, which are entitlements. Scratch the entitlement problem, and you find out it's health care. My only problem with Obamacare, well, maybe I have one or two, but it doesn't sufficiently control costs, at least as it exists now. It probably needs to be tinkered with down the line to actually get a control on you know, the fact it costs $5 to get an aspirin in a hospital instead of 5 cents.
All right. Now, I want to ask you guys to think about the next hour, because we are going to talk about immigration. We've been talking about budget and Obamacare. We're going to talk about immigration a little bit in the next hour, at least. And I want you to factor this in, because our listeners have been saying you allow a change in immigration and you're going to be adding more folks to the country who need support from the government. And I wonder how that plays out either through the budget or through Obamacare. All of that is coming up in the next hour here on Beyond the Beltway, where Bruce Dumont is not with us this evening. I am sitting in. It's Chris Roebling, and joining us, Bob Dold, former United States Congressman, Bob Kramer, a partner at Democracy Partners, and Chicago Tribune columnist and adjunct professor at DePaul, John McCarron. And, of course, all of you are on with us, too. We'll be back right after these words. Live from Chicago, this is Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our really all-star panel this evening, including John McCarron, the Chicago Tribune columnist and adjunct professor at DePaul University here in Chicago, Bob Kramer, a partner at Democracy Partners and longtime political strategist and author, and Bob Dold, a former United States congressman, a Republican from Illinois' 10th Congressional District. Our program is coming to you tonight from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications radio studio in Chicago's beautiful River North neighborhood. You can call in with your comments at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289, or send an email to btb@museum.tv. Joining us this hour will be Michael Barone, longtime noted national political analyst, co-editor of the Almanac of American Politics and many, many books. He's got a new one out now called Shaping America: How Surges of Immigration Transformed America and Its Politics. We'll be hearing from Michael Barone just now. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Well, it's very good to join you, and I just want to make one minor emendation. It's How Surges of Migration, because I'm talking about both immigration from abroad and internal migration within the country.
And how are surges of migration actually shaping our conversation this evening about, on the one hand, budget imbalances that are represented by the debt limit extension, and on the other hand, Obamacare, which some people think is the best thing since sliced bread, and other people are trying their best to undo?
Well, in fact, if you look at surges of recent migration, what I call internal volitional migration, you see patterns where that are producing the political deadlock we have. We're seeing Democratic voters, heavily Democratic voters, blacks, Hispanics, gentry, liberals, clustering in central cities, in some suburbs, university towns, and they those clustered votes are enough to carry a Democratic candidate nearly all the way to a majority in the Electoral College. But when you're looking at equal population districts, like those that elect the members of the House of Representatives, you find that outside those clusters, Republican voters are spread more evenly around, so that President Obama, even while he carried a majority of the Electoral College, failed to carry a majority of the congressional districts. Of course, that still makes him president, but it means that you're likely to get, as indeed we did get, a Republican majority in the House of Representatives.
And is that a source of polarization?
Yes, it's a source of polarization. One of the volitional migration themes of the last 40 years have been people moving to what they consider to be culturally congenial locations. You know, the kind of professional people that move to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex wouldn't accept a promotion and a raise if they had to move to the San Francisco Bay Area, and vice versa. People are tending to want to live in communities that are congenial to them, where other people tend to share their values and their views.
But what is your assignment to the role of, say, reapportionment and the drawing of districts, and the extent to which either Republicans at the State House in Pennsylvania or Democrats in Springfield, Illinois, have further polarized already existing differences in our political structure?
Well, Republicans had a net advantage in redistricting in the cycle after the 2010 census, and took advantage of it in a number of states. Democrats got the redistricting advantage in Illinois, Maryland, California, and Arizona, so that offset the Republican advantage in terms of House of Representative districts to some extent. The redistricting advantage is only marginal because the clustering is the main thing that affects, that gives Republicans an advantage in equal population districts. A couple of political science professors at the University of Michigan went and took the Florida data from the 2000 presidential election, in other words, an election that was absolutely even in the state of Florida, and they drew, they had a computer draw thousands of redistricting plans based on principles. They had to be equal population districts, and they had to be contiguous. And what they found is that the computer almost never drew a plan in which there were even an even number of congressional districts carried by George W. Bush and Al Gore. Almost all the computer plans gave a majority of districts to George W. Bush. That's because of the clustering of the Democratic vote, not because of the partisan leanings of the computer.
And what do you think about these movements in places around the country to replace political redrawing of districts, i.e., directly controlled by elected officials in a state house or state senate, or, you know, generally in a state general assembly, with so-called nonpartisan commissions that sort of have a blue ribbon cast to them, and then you go directly down to a staff member who has a laptop or an iPad at this point and just does the redistricting that way?
Well, the commissions can be gamed. And in my judgment, the commissions in California, which is drawing 53 congressional districts, Arizona drawing 9, were basically gamed by the Democrats in a way that gave Democrats a net advantage in seats that some other redistricting plans might not have given them. You see the same thing in the United Kingdom where they have a districting commission. And the Labour Party has simply been much more adept at redistricting there. They've got in the UK they have these things that says, well, a district might be around a historical manor or something like that. And the Labour Party guys have exhumed documents from the year 1253 to show that there's a manor there and that they have to draw the district line there. And of course, that just happens to favor the Labour Party.
I wonder if you could comment on the sense that after a few flights of polls, we've got, Bob Cramer is on tonight, Bob Dold is on tonight, former congressman from the North Shore District that you've chronicled along with all 434 other districts over the last 40 years in another of your titles, The Almanac of American Politics, which is really a fantastic, not to say slow motion history of American politics, but indeed it has something of that flavor. I wonder if you could talk with us briefly about the possibility that what you have here at stake in this Obamacare budget divergence down in Washington of a generational loss for one party, perhaps the Republicans, or a generational gain for another, perhaps the Democrats. I'm saying perhaps because we don't know how this is all going to shake out yet. Are those stakes actually present in the back and forth down there?
Well, the stakes are always present, but if you look at the last 20 years, the Democrats have won 4 of the 6 presidential elections, won the popular vote plurality in a 5th. Republicans have won majorities in the House of Representatives 8 out of 10 elections. And both parties, the Democrats do not have as strong a lock on the presidency as the Republicans had between 1968 and 88. Republicans don't have as solid a lock on the House of Representatives as Democrats did from 1968 to 1992. What I think we're seeing is spirited two-party competition, and we're also seeing some things happening here that reflect long ago movements.
We've got to hold it right there. Michael Barone, thank you for joining us. Stick with us over this break. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Beyond the Beltway. I'm Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We're going to be back with Michael Barone right after these words. Stay with us. Sunday evening means Beyond the Beltway. I'm Chris Roebling sitting in tonight for Bruce Dumont. Joining us on the live line, we've got Michael Barone, whose new book, Shaping America, How Surges of Migration Transformed America and Its Politics is now out. It's available on Amazon. Our all-star panel in the studio, Bob Dold, former congressman, Bob Kramer, partner at Democracy Partners, and Chicago Tribune columnist and adjunct professor at DePaul University, John McCarron. Michael Barone, John McCarron's got a question for you.
Yeah, Mike, but before the break, you were saying that what's going on now evokes something historically for political trends of the past in American politics. Would you would you explain that one?
Well, the in my book, Shaping Our Nation, I look at migrations, internal and immigrant, going back to the Scots-Irish migration, surge of migration a dozen years before the American Revolution. It was both an immigrant migration across the ocean from Northern Ireland, Lowland Scotland, and an internal migration because these people were moving on what were then the fringes of the British Empire. And these were fighting peoples. They moved down the Appalachian chain from western Pennsylvania, down the Shenandoah Valley, into the Carolinas, into Kentucky and Tennessee. Their great exemplar was Andrew Jackson, the winner of the Battle of New Orleans and the man who sent the Indians west on the Trail of Tears. And that region has continued to have the kind of political characteristics that Andrew Jackson exemplified. Much of it was historically attracted to his Democratic Party, but they also dislike crony capitalism, and they don't like a sort of Pacific dovish accommodationist style of foreign policy. And that's an area where Barack Obama has done very badly. Karl Rove spotted this in the 2000 campaign of George W. Bush when Al Gore was the candidate from Tennessee. And he made a point of contesting West Virginia, which had been a, you know, a very heavily Democratic state and only gone for a Republican president a couple times since 1928. And I remember telling him, I said, Carl, what are you doing that for? It doesn't make any sense. He says, yes, it does. And in fact, Bush carried West Virginia. He was more in line with that Scots-Irish character than Al Gore. And without those five electoral votes, we never would have spent all that time counting Florida's votes, because Al Gore would have been elected president whichever way if he'd carried West Virginia.
Sounds to me like a glitch. Okay, Bob Kramer is going to come on now, and he's got a question for you, Michael Barone.
Michael, it sounds like a fascinating book. Can't wait to read it. It does seem to me that the question of concentration, which you raised earlier, which I don't dispute at all, as an impact, on, particularly in the House, there are two offsetting factors that may very well pertain in the next couple of years. One has to do with this migration question, really, is the change in demographics of the people of the United States. Single women, Latinos, Asians, millennials, African Americans, composing an increasing percentage of the overall electorate, and making it very difficult for the Republicans in their current form to compete. And the other, frankly, are events like the shutdown, which has been a political bloodbath for the Republicans, as the generic in the next election has gone up to like eight now in terms of the House, and we've seen massive reductions in the popularity of the Republican Party overall. What do you think?
Well, I don't know where the fallout from the shutdown is going to go, and you can see Republicans tend to run ahead in actual elections of where they are in the generic poll. Mitt Romney carried 226 congressional districts last time, Barack Obama 209. Even though Obama won 51% of the popular vote, that's another effect of clustering. I think, the movements that we've had, some of those movements you point to favor Democrats. Millennials, Obama went down from 66% of millennials to 60% this time. They haven't been doing well economically. Let's see where they go. Baby boomers were much more for George McGovern in 72 than the rest of the electorate. They voted for Mitt Romney in 2012. So those young preferences don't necessarily survive into older age. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But you've also got blocks of the electorate that are problems for the Democrats. White evangelical Protestants, they're a steady 26% of the electorate. That's about three times the number of Hispanics. There was speculation that they wouldn't vote for a Mormon this time. Well, they voted 79-21 for Mitt Romney. So if I was a Democrat, I would be thinking, gee, that block is maybe a problem. Just as if I was a Republican, I would say, gee, the Hispanics are a problem. They went, 67-31 for Barack Obama over Mitt Romney.
Michael Barone, Bob Dold, former congressman, is here, and he's got a question for you.
Michael, thank you for taking the time to be with us. I'm spending a lot of time out just talking to voters, and similar themes are popping up with regard to the policies that are being put in place are making it harder and harder for me to put fuel in the car. The cost of fuel is going up. The cost of food is going up. The cost of education is through the roof. Generally just making it harder and harder for me to raise my family today than it was 5 and 10 years ago. And as we look at that context, which I think is really keeping people up at night, and then we've got what's going on in Washington today, how is that going to shake out? I mean, I think both parties are certainly blundering in this whole thing, but how is that going to shake out when we talk about what people are really concerned about versus trying to get Washington and their act together?
Well, clearly we've got a somewhat disappointing economy. The economic recovery has been going along, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, since June 2009, but it's been the slowest and most sluggish economic recovery we've seen in a long time, and it's left some of the private sectors behind. I mean, when Don Rumsfeld ran in the North Shore Congressional District under different boundaries back in 1962, it was the highest income congressional district in the country. It ain't anymore. The highest income congressional districts are in the environs of Washington, D.C. And Washington, I'm happy to say, as a Washington condominium owner, real estate market is doing just fine. It's the rest of the country that's got some problems. So, you know, I think that is something of a problem for Democratic candidates. People will say your administration policies have been followed, certainly during the first 2 years of the Obama administration, and the results don't seem to be what we'd like them to be.
Now, Mike Barone, are you able to stay with us past past the half of the hour?
Yeah, I can do that.
That's terrific. All right. In that case, I want to give a couple of our listeners the great privilege of actually posing one of their questions to you. Let's go to Caroline in Chicago. She's been listening on WLS. She's very patient. Thank you, Caroline. Could you take your point and turn that into a question for Michael Barone, the author of Shaping America, How Surges of Migration Transformed America and Its Politics? Caroline. We may have lost Caroline, so we're going to go to her colleague, Paul, who is driving close to Chicago, also listening on WLS. Go ahead, Paul, with your question for Mike Barone.
Hello,
Paul? Paul, you are on the air with Mike Barone. He is not on the air with Mike Barone. So we're having, I'm not sure what happened there. We lost those two. I'm going to try one more. No, we're not going to try one more. We're going to let the gremlins work themselves out. That's a glitch. We must be working on the Obamacare framework back there, and the website is getting polluted with Obamacare glitches.
Well, people are going to think that the three-digit code for Obamacare is 404.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
For Mike Barone, John McCarron. We had a caller earlier from California who was very upset at immigrants that are surrounding her, it seems, out in California. And it often comes into play politically. People say they're taking jobs that Americans would want, one. And the other thing is they use an inordinate amount of public services. Are either of those the case in your...
Well, she was saying there are linguistic privileges that don't inure to the benefit of native English speakers. She said, you know, you really need to speak Spanish to get a job. And that was another point that she made. So, I mean, she had a real indictment there. She had several points that she was making. Mike Barone, what do you think?
Well, one of the streams of migration I look at in my book, Shaping Our Nation, is the unpredicted surge of Latin migration, especially from Mexico into the United States. And one of the things about these different surges of migration, they tend to begin unexpectedly. The experts don't predict them. They last for just one or two generations, and then they tend to end unpredictably. And one of the interesting things about the migration from Mexico is it's over, at least for the time being. The Pew Hispanic Study reports that there's been no net migration from Mexico to the United States since 2007, since the housing price collapse. Obviously, that's in part a response to economic incentives. I think it's also in part because people migrate to pursue dreams and escape nightmares. And the dream of many of these Mexican migrants, legal and illegal, was to take advantage of those government programs, get a house mortgage with no money down, and then accumulate some net worth. And that dream got shattered. You look at where the foreclosures were in the years just around the housing price collapse, and about a third of them nationally were Hispanic. So some of these people are employing what Mitt Romney rather unadroitly characterized as self-deportation. Certainly there are clashes where people come in there. We've had not only in California, we've not only had very large numbers of Latinos enter the state, we've had very large numbers of people, particularly the middle class, leave. California is a high tax, high housing cost state, and basically middle class Americans have been moving out. Recent report shows California has the biggest income inequality of any state, and it has also the highest percentage of people living in poverty. So that's been the cumulative result of a series of public policies and of an anticipated surge of immigration that basically lasted 1982 to 2007, one generation, but it involved an awful lot of people.
Do you find, Mike Barone, current immigration reform proposals on Capitol Hill equivalent to the actual problem that exists out there?
Well,
I've got less than 30 seconds.
I'm critical of both the supporters and opponents of the Senate bill. I think the most important thing is adjust our immigration flow to get high-skill immigrants. Canada and Australia have done this with great success.
And we've got to
we
go.
Don't have
we'll,
that.
We will hear more from Mike Barone right after this break. You're tuned in to Beyond the Beltway. Stick with us. Sunday evening, Beyond the Beltway. Instead of Bruce Dumont, it's Chris Roebling sitting in. Bruce taking the night off. Joined by an all-star panel of John McCarron, Bob Dold, Bob Kramer, and on the phone from Washington, we're joined by Michael Barone. His new book, Shaping Our Nation, How Surges of Migration Transformed America and Its Politics, is now out. We do have a listener we think has got a pretty decent question. Daniel, out in Redding, California, Mike, is listening on KQMS. Daniel, do you have a question for Mike Barone?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Once again, we have lost Daniel. We're sorry about that, folks. We're going to try and fix those gremlins. No more listener calls, I think, here. All right. I want to ask you, Mike Barone, about the possibility of emerging from this impasse. If we go back to, say, Roger Fisher and Harvard Law School and how you resolve these big issues, everybody has to have a fig leaf so that there's a face-saving exit. Do you find any constituency on the Republican side to give a fig leaf to President Obama? Do you find any constituency on the Democratic side to give a fig leaf to the Republicans? Is there even any common ground on which all of these folks can stand?
Well, as initially stated last week, it looked like there wasn't much common ground. The Republican House Republicans passed a bill first to defund Obamacare, which obviously the president wasn't going to accept, and then a much more popular measure to delay Obamacare, which I think they would have been well advised to start off with. And after all, the president has delayed the employer mandate, has delayed verification of eligibility for Obamacare facilities, has given special treatment to labor unions and members of Congress and their staffs. There was an argument for that and a way to go around public way to go to public opinion on that. I think the Democrats feel that their initial demand, a so-called clean CR, another continuing spending at about approximately the sequester levels, a little change, I think they felt that they were making a concession by accepting that because they don't like the sequester levels. They were no longer demanding higher taxes on high earners, which President Obama in previous negotiations was asking for. And it was something they knew the House Republicans would never vote for. And so their view is, hey, we've already given it the office, you know. And so forth. I think the way to solve this is one of Rumsfeld's rules, enlarge the problem. That's what Paul Ryan has tried to do by talking about addressing at least incrementally some of the entitlement issues. I think there are, you know, majority of votes in both houses of Congress to eliminate the medical devices tax, which is a tax on revenues, not profits of medical device firms. And people who make these, it's going to raise the cost of these wonderful medical devices that enhance so many people's lives and prolong them. That's a pretty popular thing. I think one of the problems here is that President Obama and, to some extent, the House Republicans haven't been obeying James Madison.
And what did James Madison say that they should have been obeying?
James Madison and the 39 other framers that signed the Constitution set up separate branches of government with different functions that inevitably have to work together. The president's supposed to run the government, but Congress funds it. That implies a duty of consultation. In order to make government work, you need to be in touch. And President Obama, for whatever reasons, has been much less of a presidential schmoozer with members of Congress than Bill Clinton was, even less than George W. Bush. And that's a problem.
Let's ask our Democrat, Bob Cramer.
Presidential schmoozing has nothing to do with it. There is a radical group of people, a small extremist wing of the Republican Party, that is holding the country hostage right now. And the president is not going to allow that to be a precedent for every next 6 weeks having the same thing.
Let me just be clear.
This device manufacturers thing.
We've had 17 government shutdowns since the late 70s, and presidents have negotiated with members of Congress. That the precedent's pretty clearly set in line with Madison's conception. I think you can say that the House Republicans, by calling for defunding Obamacare, were asking for something that the president would never concede, and that was an ill-advised
move. It was impossible.
That's a fair criticism.
And beyond that, I mean, do we really think that shutting down the government was warranted in order to get a tax break for medical device manufacturers? That's an outrage.
Well,
really.
Tax break is paid by users of medical device, people that get.
But you really think that that's the kind of issue you shut the government down for, Michael?
Well, the fact is that we've shut the government down 17 times since the late 70s over disputes, and because the constitutional structure is such that you tend to bargain when you come up against deadlines. That's true in commercial life. It's true in public life. It's true in both public and private sectors, and that's what we're seeing now. I think we had inadept negotiation on both sides here. That if they had proceeded more adeptly, they could have reached agreement before the deadline, which would be desirable.
Let's ask Bob Dold, were you schmoozed at all by President Obama when you served in the United States House of Representatives?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't schmoozed by the president or really had a whole lot of contact with
Did that affect your voting?
No. I mean, I wouldn't say it affected my voting. I don't think that there was a lot of communication back and forth on priorities necessarily.
Were they concerned with what you thought?
Well, my understanding is there wasn't much communication with Democratic members, much less Republicans.
There was certainly, and not that we're going to get into a symposium here on Obama relations with Congress, but I mean, there was an odd thing. We're talking about Obamacare, which, like the stimulus plan in the 2009 back timeframe, you know, Rahm, who had been a member of Congress, who had been in leadership, Rahm Emanuel, who now serves as mayor of the city of Chicago and was then the chief of staff, sort of decided with President Obama, who came right out of the legislative branch to the White House, that it would perhaps be better on the case of the stimulus bill to have David Obey write it. He was then the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. And then when they got around to the Affordable Care Act, they sort of said, well, Nancy Pelosi and some of her, George Miller from California, a few of those guys, they'll take the lead. In other words, the White House ceded the writing of these bills as you recall, I mean, there wasn't even a White House Affordable Care Act text. The White House was always sort of reacting to the latest version that came out of
democratically
controlled subcommittee on the House side.
In the first 2 years of the administration, some of the most significant acts of Congress were passed in 50 years. Obamacare was the most significant piece of legislation, social legislation, since Medicare.
But what did Medicare get passed by? I mean, Medicare got passed with broad bipartisan support.
There were Republicans who supported Medicare and no Republicans.
Wasn't
a decision made not to involve Republicans
one of the biggest criticisms of Max Baucus in the Senate, who presided over the writing of the Senate, was he worked for months to engage the Republicans in a bipartisan plan. There was never a Republican alternative put on the table ever.
Mike Barone, was this the Olympia Snow gambit? We're going to talk to Olympia. We're going to sit down with Olympia. We're going to have tea with Olympia. Oh, my God, Olympia is telling us she's voting against it.
Well, I think that One of the things that we're involved here is that the Congress is now involved in writing 2,000-page bills that affect the economy in all sorts of ways. They are heavily lobbied, as they will inevitably be in a country where you have a right to petition your government for redress of grievances under the First Amendment. You know, if you go back to the New Deal legislation or even to Medicare, much simpler legislation. And trying to do these complex things in a relatively rushed manner. Medicare was under consideration for many years, was critiqued, was attacked. Other Republicans came out for it. Some Democrats came out against it. It was under discussion for an extended period of time over more than one administration in Congress. This legislation wasn't, and some of it seems to be, you know, the decision to pass the pass the Senate bill in the House. The Senate bill passed in December 2009, and then after the Scott Brown victory in the special election in Massachusetts, the Democrats no longer had 60 votes in the Senate, and they decided to go ahead and pass the Senate bill, which everybody had thought would not be the final version. You'd have a conference committee to get the glitches out, to hone it down, to get it better, to bring in, one hopes, expertise from the executive branch as well as the legislative branch. Lobbyists would weigh in, and that never happened. And so the administration, at the urging of Speaker Pelosi, took a risk on passing legislation that it knew to be less perfect than it wanted it to, than it intended it to be. And that's a risk, you know, you take a gamble, you can pay a price. The bill has never been popular before it was passed, while it was being considered, or after it passed, which is a contrast with Medicare, with Social Security, and the other legislation.
And the big fear of the right wing is they have to stop it now, because once it's in effect, it will be hard to take away, because its popularity will soar, just as it did in Massachusetts. Remember, it was based on the Republican plan passed by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts.
Well, if we're taking the position of Senator Ted Cruz, I'm inclined to disagree, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, and if we want to go on the Massachusetts claim, Massachusetts was probably closest to it, which would say, why in the world would they have put Scott Brown in office then, in a historic election, to vote a Republican from Massachusetts in, which happened to be the 41st vote that he would have said no, this is not the plan.
The 41st vote.
Right. He campaigned as an opponent to the so-called, at the time, Affordable Care Act. Well, we've got another minute with Mike Barone.
And he lost the next election, let's be clear.
Yeah, Mike Barone, are you coming out to Chicago? Are you speaking? Are we going to see you out here soon?
I don't have any plans to come out to Chicago, but I'll just make the final point on my book, Shaping Our Nation. Chicago was a great product of the New England Yankee westward diaspora. All these people from New England stock, from upstate New York and everything, founded Chicago, set up the futures markets, built the canal, and set the place up, and got it going in 1848.
You're
in Yankee land.
Thanks so much, Michael Barone, author of Shaping Our Nation. It's out now. You want to be sure to get a copy. You are tuned to Beyond the Beltway this Sunday night. I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. We're going to be back after these words. It's Beyond the Beltway from our broadcast home here at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago's River North neighborhood. Joining me tonight, Bob Dold, former congressman from the 10th District in Illinois. Bob Kramer, a big Democratic political strategist and partner at Democracy Partners. John McCarron, an adjunct professor at DePaul University and Chicago Tribune columnist. I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. So terrific conversation there with Mike Barone, who's really one of the top analysts, I think, and has made a vast contribution to our understanding of American politics over his lengthy career. But as we wind down this program, we've got another sort of, you know, just a few minutes to talk about. I want to get back to this question of where do we go from here? And I want to ask, so I'm going to ask sort of contrapositive questions of Bob and Bob. Bob Kramer, what is the solution to this issue of overspending? What solution would this White House, would this president, would the Democrats in the Senate, Harry Reid and company, what would they agree to?
Well, first, if there is a change, if there's an attempt to try and get a balanced budget over a long period of time, then it needs to have both new revenue and and some adjustments to expenditures. But we don't have too much spending. We have too little revenue. And it's not from normal people. It's from the very richest people in America. As I said earlier, Chris, our problem is not we're not wealthy in America. It's
okay.
who has all that wealth.
What percent of the income tax share from the top 1% or the top 5% would you say, okay, we've gotten the right share from the, quote, the wealthy? Whatever you define them.
Let me give you an example. Republicans propose privatizing Social Security to fix its problems, so-called. The way to fix Social Security's problems is to take the cap off of the income that's paid on Social Security tax, which is now $113,000, and allow everybody up to be millionaires.
But can you answer my other question? I'm asking you a question.
In addition to that, top
5%, what percent of the total receipts for the income tax do you want to see?
That's not the way you want to think about it. The way you want to think about
it
is...
But that's the way it ends up.
The way you want to think about it is... The way you want to think about it is to say, who should be paying more because they have benefited enormously? New income has gone to the top 5% of the population.
Chris, obviously,
Bob Dold.
Bob is going to want to have it both ways. He's going to want to talk about that top percentage point as to how wealthy they are, but doesn't want to say how much they should have. I think that really what we're talking about here is that we've got more money coming into the federal coffers this year than we've had in a heck of a long time in the country's history. It's just there's more money coming in. We don't have a taxing problem. We've got a spending problem. And in terms of how we solve this problem, I do believe that people are looking to try to have Washington come together on common ground. There was a bipartisan budget that was proposed in the 112th Congress. There were four Republicans and four Democrats. I was one that, based on the Simpson-Bowles plan, put something on the floor of the House of Representatives and said, you know what, we're not all going to like this, but this is trying to tackle the big issues that are in front of us,
right?
Trying to bend this cost curve down so that we don't find ourselves bumping up against a $17 trillion debt, and that is going to be something that's going to grow. So it's going to be a give and take, but I do think the American public are looking for solutions to these problems.
The way to do it is not by eliminating Medicare, which you voted to do in the last session.
I didn't vote to eliminate Medicare at all. No, it's actually not. That's not accurate at all. But I mean, that's the part of the spin machine that people want to do. I do think, though, if we don't try to fix it, because what I do believe in the social safety net, we need to strengthen that social safety net. To do nothing and just kind of let it go is frankly, I think, irresponsible.
John McCarran, former Congressman Dole just mentioned the Simpson-Bowles Commission, and it worked hard, and it came up with a plan.
Good ideas.
It was commissioned by President Obama.
It was.
But when they came back with their report, what did President Obama do with that report?
And it basically said that the two Bobs who are sitting to my right and left were wrong. We have a taxing and a spending problem. So,
okay, what did President Obama do about that commission report?
Well, he didn't do enough with it. I'm not going to defend it. I mean,
I'm not asking to defend or attack. What did he do with it?
Well, it got tabled, basically.
As a longtime columnist of the Tribune, why do you think it was tabled?
Because it had some cuts to Medicare that were unpalatable at the moment.
And were unwarranted.
I don't think so, Bob, because taxing and spending, we have too many loopholes. We have hedge fund managers, millionaire hedge fund managers who were taxed at the same rate as the women who clean their offices at night.
Right.
We're here in Illinois. We have two-thirds of Illinois corporations pay no corporate income tax. I won't pound the table.
Bad on radio.
Okay, I'll stop doing that. And on spending, three reasons: healthcare. I mean, that's why this Obamacare thing is so important, and that's why my major disappointment is there are not enough brakes on this thing to slow what stuff costs. Why does the aspirin cost $5 in a hospital and 10 cents in a drugstore?
Kramer, when are we going to get 5-cent aspirin in the hospital?
I do agree. I mean, we pay more per capita in the United States on healthcare than any other industrial country by 40%, and we get results that are worse than most of the rest of the world, unfortunately. That's because of the nature of private insurance in the United States. That's why we need a public option or a single payer to really bring down cost. But Obamacare is a good step in the right direction. And we've seen, as a consequence, healthcare costs go up at their slowest rate this last 2 years that they have in a generation.
Bob Dold, is this thing going to be resolved by the time Bruce Dumont is back in this chair 1 week from tonight?
It sure better be. We better have the government better get this act in gear. We better put the debt limit up. And I hope that we're going to have compromise and the president's going to come to the table and negotiate.
John McCarron of the Tribune, will this be resolved by the time Bruce is here next Sunday night?
No, I don't think so. But I think the Dow and the S&P will be down so much that maybe after 2 weeks of this foolishness, it'll be resolved.
Bob Cramer, is there going to be a short-term extension of the debt limit ceiling and then resolution of the Obamacare issue?
I'd say a 50-50 odds of the debt ceiling limit and the CR by the end of the week, but we'll see.
We will see. We will see. That'll be a week from tonight. Tune back in to Beyond the Beltway when Bruce Dumont is back in this chair. Sitting in tonight, I'm Chris Roebling, and I thank our all-star panel of John McCarron, Bob Cramer, and Bob Dold. I also want to say this is a Genevieve production in association with WLS Radio in Chicago. I also want to thank Dan Dorfman and Tom Vercruz, who helped make this program possible. Until next week at this time, it's Chris Roebling saying goodnight from Chicago.